Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 392 of the Roguecast, recorded November 2nd, 2022. The official Marvel Snaps podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Marvel Snap podcast.
If you don't recall subscribing to the Marvel Snap podcast,
I regret to inform you that that is going to be the podcast for a while.
Don't scare them off, Randy. We actually have lots of other things to talk about, but we have gotten obsessed with this app game that we talked about last week.
Last week.
Or two weeks ago.
It was last week. When last we talked, Nick had not been yet addicted to a game.
But he was starting to play it.
I was starting to
play it. That's right. That day.
And then we also have since recruited our staffer, John.
We dragged him into it, yes.
And we're going to try and get Serena on board.
Yeah.
I think this is far-reaching than we even think. Because, like, I've had friends be like, have you played this game, Snap?
Yeah, a lot of people seem to be playing it.
Is it like that bad old episode of Star Trek Next Generation where they were all addictively playing a little app-type game?
You think it's an alien invasion?
I'm saying that...
I think we're being tested.
Wesley, save us. This is your hour.
So Marvel Snap, for those who don't remember last week's, it is basically a little card game on your phone. You get three random locations. You throw down Marvel heroes and villains.
Yeah, you get to recruit heroes and villains as you win the games.
And you try to win two of the three locations.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
If you're really good.
Yeah. And your hand is not like a big 60-card deck like in Magic the Gathering or something like that where it's going to require sort of convoluted thinking and deep strategies
it's
to get involved in.
Right?
12 cards. 12 yeah. Cards. And so each of us, I would wager, has a number of decks that we've made.
I'm up to 15 decks.
Because I kill off a lot of old ones, I think I only have like 6 or 7 right
now.
How
do you delete a deck? I haven't been able to figure out how to do
it. You just take them out of the. Take the cards out.
Oh.
Actually, there's a faster way.
Okay.
You can do it all at once. When you change the name of it, a little trash can appears under the name change option.
Ah, okay.
And you can delete the whole deck.
I thought that was for deleting the name.
If you want to do it the dumb way, you can do it.
I'm surprised I haven't accidentally deleted the deck when trying to clear out the name at this point now.
I was doing the same thing you were, Nick, for a while. I just happened to notice the other day.
That's good to know.
It's a little weird that they don't make it more obvious. But anyway, the game has lots of... in addition to just, it is a very fun to play game, and you can play a round, like a game of it in just like 5 minutes once you know the deal on it.
Yep.
And in fact, because it's a timed game, you can't really go too much longer than that.
Right.
It's not a very, I'm a sort of an anxious person with time limit games. And yes, there is a time limit in this, but you don't have to make a ton of choices, so it's like you're usually thinking like, of 2 or 3 things you might do, what's the best of them? And you know, so it's not really crazy. And early on, because it matches you against people at your level especially, you're going to probably do pretty good on this game, I think. Eventually you will hit that plateau where the people are pretty good. But it's I think it's an extremely rewarding game, especially early on. The tutorial's good. There's a lot of neat animation and sound effects to it.
Yeah.
It's got some kind of fun wit to it. When you're about to say, like, play Hawkeye's card, as you drag it into the play area, he will like fire little animated arrows at your opponents, and you'll feel a little hum, a little buzz, it activates a little vibration in your phone. Who else does that? There's a few. Ant-Man, when you play his card, it like becomes a little tiny card for a minute and then shrinks and grows up to normal size.
So I just got Miles Morales, and Miles, when you play him, his card flips into play.
Oh, that's cool.
Also, like, the TVA is one of the locations, and when it plays...
That's the Time Variance Authority from Loki.
When on turn 3, when turn 4 is being the last turn of the game, Little Miss Minutes appears and reminds you that the game's about to end.
Oh, that's what that was. I did see that, and I didn't realize what that was.
And then when the game ends on turn 4, one of the little explosion bombs that wipes out timelines comes up.
That's
like
cool.
There's all kinds of little animations like that. Also, tons of characters, like obscure, weirder characters.
There are characters I don't really know. And it's fun to... But oftentimes they have neat powers.
Yep.
And it's fun to use them, and it makes me even kind of want to read about some of these characters I don't know much about.
Where's Nick, Sleepwalker?
Nick, who is the bane of your existence right now?
Oh, God, Scorpion.
Yeah, Spider-Man foes Scorpion, whose ability when you put him in play is he knocks your opponent's deck, all your guys down by one power.
Yeah. And I have something to counter it with the Koye.
Koye, who does the opposite, yes.
Yeah, does the opposite.
She a little spear stabs on your deck, your guys get plus one power.
Yeah.
Rennie, do you have a bane of your existence?
I'm trying to think. I think the bane of my existence, and also one of my favorite cards, is Hobgoblin.
Yep.
Because he's -8 power, which is a big shift. But when you play him, he flies over to the other side.
Uh-huh.
But if you play him
Oh, he's like a big bad luck token, yeah. Right?
But if you play him and the other guy plays a card and he's filled up his space, there's only four spaces at these locations,
yeah.
Then suddenly you've given yourself -8 points.
Right.
Also, there's one game, there's one space that does the reveal effects double.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that. I wasn't thinking about it. So I played Hobgoblin. He flew over to the other side and immediately flew back to...
That's terrible. I believe we may have even talked about this in week one. An early one that it's fun to use, it's not fun to have used against you, a very cheap card, is Electra.
Yep.
Electra's a low point card, but she essentially, when she appears, she will assassinate a low point card from your opponent.
And some of your low point cards, if they're on the board for a while, can get to pretty high power.
Right. Yeah. An example is Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Ant-Man, if you've got him in a group, he does best in a group, and so if you have three cards on that location, like he adds a bonus of 3 points
plus
or something
four.
Like,
yeah.
Or plus four.
Yeah.
So if she happens to take out Ant-Man, she can severely debilitate a group.
She's wrecked your whole strategy, yeah. For
yeah.
Sure.
And it is very fun to do that if you have her. It is very unfun to have that done. And I think we mentioned there's fun cosmetic upgrades you can get to your cards from making them 3D or have little bits of animation in them, as well as variant art cards.
Yep.
That's the stuff that they want you to purchase, but I know that y'all, I think, have broken down, but I have yet to make any purchases.
Really?
I haven't bought anything.
Oh, have you not? Okay.
No.
I have bought two things.
I know that, Randy, for instance, you bought Cap early on, which was just a couple bucks, $3.
Yep.
But I eventually got Cap just through, some random card draws.
I have a variant for Cap that's a Chris Samney.
Oh, really? That's cool.
That I just got randomly. So my Cap's cooler than both of hers.
I have a random Cap. I don't think I have the Chris Samney one, so...
But yeah, and that's one of the fun things is, getting those variants and... I have a variant Odin that I don't actually like very much. But I do like the card of Odin. Odin will juice up your other cards and re-trigger abilities that have already gone off.
He is a super powerful one.
It's a cool one. Anyway, we're recommending the game Marvel Snap.
Marvel Snap. We don't sell anything related to it. I mean, in comics, but we don't really... Like, we just all like it.
Yeah, that's the thing. What was I going to say? The one thing it lacks right now is sort of a PvP mode. Everything in the game technically is PvP, but you cannot choose who you're playing. You're matched with people. So we would, I'm sure, like to match our decks against each other and see how we do. Right at the moment, you can't, but that's okay because part of the fun of the game is just how quick you can just get into a game and play and knock a game out.
Yep.
So right now, it's sort of to the advantage of the game. I'm sure they're considering and working on it. It'll probably be season two or whatever.
Yeah.
But, it's good times.
Yep.
What else we got?
Well, we got we had our Halloween. We had our Halloween party.
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun.
We had our Halloween day where Serena came out and gave out candy and comics to children and grab bags that she'd made.
That's right. Man, people who came in, they got the goods. If you missed out on it, you missed out.
Yep.
We're thinking of doing more Halloween stuff next year.
Yep,
we're probably
going
to revisit the party idea.
Yep.
We'll refine some stuff and do it again. It's been a while since we've done events, and to some degree, the gaming events and things like that that were regular at the store, we can't do for space reasons.
Yep.
We just filled it up the space during the pandemic times.
But you remember, we used to ever so often they do this remember the midnight launch for Rebirth where we got a cake and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that kind of thing occasionally.
Right, or D&D would do a midnight release or something
specifically
like that.
Non-gaming stuff.
Sure.
We had comics events, and this felt more like that. It was kind of get together.
Yeah.
There wasn't you didn't have to come in, you have to sit down, you didn't learn any rules. You just came in and hung out at the store, which was kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, we're gonna try and do that again. Those of you who made it out, thank you. That was super good fun.
Yep.
We had cosplayer Lucky Lemon out, and she had a really good session talking with people about cosplay, and we had a little costume contest. Everybody was very cool had some cool costumes, including Throg.
Yep, Throg was the winner.
One of our longtime customers came as one of the men in black.
Uh-huh.
She's a great. She came as woman in black.
Yep.
And A bunch of other, we had like, what, some anime characters, anyway.
Your brother came out as Care Bears?
Yes. That was, his wife, I believe, has always been a Care Bear fan, and I'm not quite sure, but somehow this was the year for the Care Bears.
Yep, he even dyed his beard yellow.
He dyed his beard yellow to match the his Care Bear fur.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
devotion, yes.
We're coming up on Black Friday. As always, we do a Black Friday sale.
I feel traumatized.
I agree.
Still,
last year. So this year is our 13th Black Friday. I feel like last year should have been our 13th Black Friday.
Yeah, because
last year when Dave showed up to open, he sent us a message like, "Hey, there's water everywhere," and our neighbor's water heater had exploded on Thanksgiving night. No one was here.
There was like in many places in the store there was an inch of water.
We had a lagoon throughout the store.
We did.
Yeah, and those of you who had to bear with it know that it like. The big cleaning was kind of like done within like a day or two, but the drying of the carpet and sort of follow through on
took weeks,
and it was awful. And we had those fans in and stuff. So by the way, retroactively again, thanks for bearing with us. We hated it as much as you did.
But the day of was terrifying. Like we had to really quick get together and get everything moving. We worked out. But
and that's another case where I got to compliment the customers. They were willing to rock around on a spongy floor and help support their local small business and keep us from crashing in those. It's not as if we weren't still reeling from the pandemic.
Yep.
And then our whole store flooded on the biggest day of the year.
Yep.
So
we're hoping to avoid that this year. We're not going to flood the store.
Avoid it this year. It would be extremely unlikely.
Yeah. We're going to try not to flood the store
this year.
Could happen. Yeah. But what we are going to do is our Black Friday sale.
Yes.
We're doing things a little bit differently. Now we have those Owlbear coins instead of gift certificates.
Yes. People have really liked the coins. We like giving them out.
Yeah. So the coins are worth $10 a piece. And basically what we're going to be doing is if you spend $25... you will get a Halfling Dice grab bags. So these are the foam brain dice bags we have. The Halfling Dice...
Some of our most popular items now.
It's a little set of mini plastic dice. It's a perfect stocking stuffer. So basically... Right.
This is like a Dungeons & Dragons set of dice.
On the day, you spend $25, you get a bonus grab bag, you get a free stocking stuffer. For every $50 you spend, you will get a Owlbear coin that you can then use as like a gift to give to people.
Yeah.
Or you can use it for yourself if you want to be like that.
Yep, if you want to be like that.
I'm not judging.
Yeah, no, for sure. The coins are very fun, and I think people are going to like having these around.
We have gotten, I guess everybody is getting ready for Christmas season. We have gotten a ton of new games the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Just a flood has been moving off the new games wall.
Randy, don't use the word flood.
Very quick.
Why you want to do that?
A deluge, if you will, of new games. a ruinous torrent of new games. They've been moving off the new wall very quickly. Nick and I have been looking, trying to figure out some way to keep displaying stuff. But this last week, we got Absolute Power, which is a Kickstarter that is the Silver Age Sentinels superhero RPG game. It's
right.
The new version of that. We got the limited edition Azul Master Chocolatier, which is the base Azul. Yeah,
just the production value.
Yeah, and it is limited run. So we
kind of
we
get getting, it while you can.
We are getting some more coming. We did sell our first batch.
Yeah, we sold out of that. We're getting more though.
We got the Legacy of Isla Nublar.
Yes.
Which is the Jurassic World Legacy game.
Which is just a cool. The pandemic ones are so good.
I think people at this point mostly know it, but if you haven't played a Legacy game, it's a game that like where you play a set number of games. You somewhere usually between like say 15 and 25 games maybe. Which is a lot, but then when you're done, you're kind of usually done.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a way to reset it, sometimes there isn't, but this is, it's very exciting. Imagine, like, you know, playing any given game, but, like, then the next time you play it, you open a pack and find out that something has changed.
Yeah.
You know, in this case, it could be like, oh, now the raptors have gotten loose in the fence, or now there's somebody from InGen skulking around on the island with guns. Like, I'm sure it will be those kind of things.
It will be, yeah. Are we all working together to build the park? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. But it's got cool dinosaur minis.
Yeah, it does.
It looks super good. We also got Trivial Pursuit Dungeons & Dragons.
This looks really cool. Test your knowledge.
This might be relevant to our customers' interests.
Yep. We got a game called Between Two Cities Essential Edition. This is a new edition of a game that's been out for a while, I guess. So the deal on this is it's a 30-minute tile drafting game for 1 to 7 players.
Uh-huh.
In which each tile is part of a city. You work with a player on your left to build one city center, while simultaneously working with the player on your right to build a second one. On each turn, you select two tiles from your bat hand, reveal them, then work with your partners to place one of your select tiles in each of your two cities.
Hence, so it's a competitive game?
At the end of the game, each city is scored for its architectural grandiosity. Your final score is the lower of the scores of the two cities you helped design, and the player with the highest final score wins the game. So you are sort of competing with each other, but you're also working together.
So collaborative, so, competitive.
They kind of did that with, say, the Marvel Legendary game.
Yeah.
In Marvel Legendary, you do all have to work together to stop the big bads, because if you don't, everybody loses.
Yep.
But in the end, somebody will have been the person who took down the most bad guys and kind of got the most fame.
Yep.
Plus, this has gorgeous artwork.
Oh, really nice looking, yeah. Quacks & Co., which is the Quacks of Quedlinburg Push Your Luck game. This is the all-ages version of that.
Oh, nice.
Journeys in Middle-Earth, which is the Middle-Earth miniatures game, gets a expansion called Scourge of the Waste, which I think has... It looks like it has the Witch King type characters.
Journeys in Middle-Earth, that's the one that's kind of based on, I believe, Mansions of Madness.
Right.
A app-driven adventure.
Star Wars X-Wing has a scenario pack called Battle of Yavin.
Oh.
We got Hello Kitty Loteria, which is a little matching game with Hello Kitty.
That sounds delightful.
New dice that are Dragon Prince and Wakanda dice. They're like D6 sets with premium dice.
Yeah, those are all really cool. They've done really well.
Sorcerer's Arena Epic Alliance. This is a Disney game that our staffer John has compared to sort of Unmatched. It's sort of a miniature. Each character has their own. So this is
build a team of like Disney heroes and villains, I guess, maybe.
So this is the Thrills and Chills expansion. I recognize one of the characters, but the other ones are Pumpkin Jack from Nightmare Before Christmas, and the mother from Tangled.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then we also got the Starfinder Dead Sons Adventure Path, the very first Starfinder adventure, collected in one big hardcover and all revised. And then from Foambrain, we got Stuffy Spa Blind Bags. This is the first blind bags that don't have dice in them.
Right.
And they are co-created with this Stuffy Spa, which is a huge TikTok account, who, like, they take stuffed animals and they, like, repair them.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is, like, you get a pack of stickers and a pin.
That's cool.
And then we also got the cool advent calendars from them, which are a 25-day advent calendar, in which by the end of the 25 days, you will have a full set of metal dice, a full set of holiday inclusion dice, so metal dice with, like, probably stockings or something else in them, and then a gemstone die.
That's
so a pretty cool little
gift, and those I know are like already selling quickly.
They've said that they're already almost out of them, so I don't know if we'll have them that long, but we do still have them. If you want to get a cool advent calendar for your kids or for yourself, if you want to be like that,
hey, may as well, right?
Treat yourself.
Moving on to news, I want to real quick mention I've mentioned the Henshin Kickstarter every week. This is our buddies Les and Nick doing a video series about the henchmen who work for supervillains. This week it is ending in about 10 days, and this week they got a matching thing. Basically, someone has offered to match donations up to $5,000. So every donation they get this week will match, and if they get all those donations, they will hit their goal by the end of the week. So if you've not donated, go over to henshin.com, give it a look. I've been promoting it on all my podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a couple good friends, and it's like a fun thing. Last week, as we were podcasting, a big bit of news dropped.
By the way, Randy, I've got a slogan for Henshin.
Yep.
Don't hench out, hench in.
I'll pass that right along.
Yeah, let them know that I'm working on PR for them.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Last week, as we were recording, we were looking at our phones, as we often do, and noticed that there'd been this big news drop. We decided to wait until we could talk about it. That is James Gunn and Peter Safran are now the guys. They're the Kevin Feige of DC now.
Right, and everybody knows who James Gunn is, I think. He's Guardians of the Galaxy, Suicide Squad guy. Who's the other guy? Is that like his collaborator on a lot of
stuff?
No,
he's
been a producer.
Yeah, he's actually done a lot of DC already. He did like Aquaman, or produced Aquaman.
He co-produced Peacemaker, Suicide Squad.
Those are both James Gunn projects,
he's
right?
He's also done The Conjuring.
So he does have some association with James Gunn.
Yeah, he's worked with James Gunn.
Yeah.
But he's not James Gunn's, like they're friends, but they're not like...
It's not like they always work together.
James Gunn didn't bring his buddy on board to run DC.
Right.
If anything, it seems more like Safran is like the producer guy. Gunn is more the creative side of things.
Right.
Which is a good partnership to have.
So I think broadly we think, you know, like I think a lot of us, you know, there's a little bit of a, well, maybe DC just needs to start from fresh. But if that's not going to happen, that's a pretty good thing, I think.
Yeah. Yes. I honestly believe that the best thing they could do is to wipe the slate clean and start with what James Gunn and Peter Safran want to do. that's not what they're going to do, because Zaslav still has his fingers in there, and there's still people at DC who think
I don't know. I think they might just say forget it.
No, because they just signed on Superman, gonna, man.
Yeah,
Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they could just start fresh with
it
Superman.
It doesn't sound like they're going to. It sounds like they're going to keep trying to
Henry
build
Cavill's
on this.
Like 50 now. He's aged out of it. He's 100 years
he's,
old.
He's going to give up playing
The Witcher.
The Witcher,
yeah,
to
I heard
be
that.
Superman.
I believe some Witcher fans were not wild about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too.
Yeah.
But I think this is a good thing. I think Gunn is a smart guy. He's maybe a little bit on the goofy, like this. His sort of approach to the goofy characters, I worry he doesn't always respect the characters as much as I'd like.
Right.
But he does like the characters.
And yeah, you know, it's like, you hope that he is sharp enough, and I think he might be, to know that, like, that's not the tone for everything.
Yeah.
But certainly he has, like, Suicide Squad is, you know, one of the better DC movies, and I haven't seen Peacemaker, but people tell me
Peacemaker's great.
It's the best thing DC's done in that format.
And then he did a lot, obviously, his Marvel work that he was quite good at. You know, his Guardians of the Galaxy essentially opened the doors for Marvel to do the crazy stuff.
Yep.
And he always does kind of a mixture of, like, a fair amount of humor, but also a lot of heart.
Yeah.
You know, arguably, what do you call it? Taika Waititi is in that same ballpark as him. I would say James Gunn is probably a little more serious than Taika Waititi.
I feel like one of the other good things to come out of this is Feige has worked with Gunn a lot of stuff, and the two of them are both.
Yeah.
I mean, Gunn said his first call was to Kevin Feige, and Feige's, you know, they're both making noises like, yeah, we're competitors, but we want to be like friendly competition. I'm like, that is better for DC and Marvel.
Yeah.
And it's better for the fans.
Yeah, when they're, somehow it just feels wrong to have superhero properties, you know, the good guys, that are, like, warring with each other.
Yeah.
It's like, that's just not cool. I know that the corporate side of it, that's maybe just inevitable, but I like when some of the bigger-than-life lead heads of the personalities behind it seem like decent human beings.
Yep, yeah. Along with this, and I don't know how this is related or probably not, but Greg Berlanti's working on a Green Lantern series for HBO Max.
Yeah.
And they're doing some big redevelopment. They lost their head writer, who apparently the pitch that they have was that they're not going with it. Because originally this was going to be a Guy Gardner, Jon Stewart show, and they were going to go into space immediately. Now they're totally...
I thought it was going to be Alan Scott.
Alan Scott, you're right. It was Alan Scott, the openly gay Green Lantern.
Yes. Yeah. Which is, of course, a fusion of, like, that's Earth 2, Alan Scott, you know, that's getting into the weeds, but yeah, be that as it may, it's, that was a premise that interested me.
I was interested in that, too. Apparently, they were going to get into space fairly soon. Like, they were definitely aiming to make the big Green Lantern I think we wanted. They're redoing it. It's going to be Jon Stewart, who, honestly, I like Jon Stewart, but he's had so much exposure in, like, Justice League and all that kind of stuff, and I think he's not as interesting in Green Lantern. He's the second most boring Green Lantern after Hal Jordan.
I kind of agree. Is it Jon Stewart and somebody still though?
It's Jon Stewart. He's
I thought there was somebody else in the mix.
I believe it is just Jon Stewart. He's going to be the lead.
It's Chip.
They may do other Green Lanterns, but it's going to be his show.
Jon Stewart and his pet squirrel Chip.
That may be sure.
I mean, honestly, the ensemble thing is, I think, the kind of the way to go.
Yeah.
I could see, like, roughly using the way CW did the Flash as the ensemble format, where it's like, yes, there's obviously the Flash as the lead, but, like, you very regularly see, say, Guy Gardner and Chip and Salak? Is that his name? Salak and some other guys, Kilowog. That would be cool. And I think it could be one of those things where the lead sometimes doesn't have to be the most interesting person. They can be the guy, the person who's interesting for everyone else to be around.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of Buffy effect.
Yeah.
So Jon Stewart could certainly work, but like you, I kind of would have preferred, you know, like a buddy cop format where it was like two Green Lanterns working in tandem. Actually, I'd love it if it was like, say they took Jessica Cruz, and she is the rookie, and she's got to work with, say, Guy Gardner, or even Jon Stewart, or one of the others, and so you see it through the rookie's eye view, but you see, you know...
It sounds like that was close to what they had, but they're not doing it this time.
I'm surprised it's at least still around, you know, as much stuff as they chopped.
Yeah.
But, we'll see.
It doesn't seem like good news to me.
Yeah, we'll see.
I feel a little more neutral on it because, like, I have no idea if the other one would have worked either. Who knows?
Yeah. So let's talk about The Witcher. Henry Cavill is leaving after season 3.
Yeah.
And Liam Hemsworth is coming on board.
This is exciting news for me, who stopped before finishing season 1.
Same.
And doesn't have any interest in the property.
Yep.
But I know a lot of people who do, including
I
saw someone make the joke. They're like, well, Liam's used to following it when people being disappointed it's not someone more famous. Like, that's harsh.
They do that.
I don't know how they're going to just like change up so drastically. I mean, they don't look a ton of,
it doesn't matter. You just put some guy in the leather. He's Geralt.
I think that's kind of true, but they could also have something like, you know, he reemerges from the portal and he's like, the dark force has infected me and I'll have to keep it at bay now, and he looks just a little different.
But they also did the crazy witch thing where she was changed by magic, so it's true. There's precedent for the witch world.
Yeah, they can have an in-story reason if they want. Nick, you're a follower of The Witcher. How many seasons have there been?
Two so far.
They've filmed a third. They haven't released it yet.
Well, there's two, the regular. There's the spin-off. Michelle Yao spinoff that's hitting December.
Yep.
And then
they do an animated thing at some point.
They've done two animated specials.
Good lord, it's a lot of Witcher.
There's a lot of stories in the Witcher universe.
Yes.
Well, they're based on novels, right? I mean,
novels and video games have built out the lore.
Video games are based off the novels too, I think.
Yeah, and then the third season I think airs April or May of next year.
Yeah.
Nick, what do you think about this?
I'm fine with it.
You don't think that the loss of Henry Cavill will destroy it?
I think people will bitch and whine, but overall I think if it's the same creators behind it,
yeah.
I mean, Henry Cavill has definitely got some personality and brings a lot to it. But I mean,
is that Bard guy still going to be in it?
Yeah, I would imagine. Guy.
And is that hot chick still going to be in it?
Yes. Probably.
Yennefer.
Yeah.
And Ciri and a couple of other people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Ciri, Morgan Tyr.
Yeah. Omar.
Veloth.
Yeah. Stop making up stupid names.
The funny thing is, like, I've seen people griping about this.
No, there's a little Steve. There's not a big Steve.
The truth is, your options were it gets canceled or Liam Hemsworth is your Witcher.
Yeah.
Like, those are your choices. People are like, why couldn't Henry Cavill? Well, because he wants to go play Superman for bigger money.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, and who's to say he won't show back up? Because he does love The Witcher.
Yeah.
I mean, he's literally a huge fan.
I felt like, you know, like, that was one of what he was going to be, but I don't know how much of it is purely money and how much of that, like, he seems to enjoy playing Superman.
He's going to get resurrected in Mission Impossible, I'm sure.
But also, like, remember, Netflix is not always maybe the best place to work. So
right.
It may be like a...
He may see the writing on the wall.
Yeah. Well, he's certainly not doing... I mean, he's an Enola Holmes. I think he's doing something else for Netflix. Yeah. He's definitely not leaving Netflix and Lurch.
He might be. He might be done. He might be...
Does he have future projects for sure?
Yeah. I thought so.
I don't know.
He's going to be
curious.
Was he in Gray Man? No, that's somebody else, right?
No, he was not. That was
Ryan Gosling and who's the other guy?
Chris Evans.
Not Chris. Captain America, not Superman.
Right.
Captain America with a weird mustache, not Superman with a weird mustache.
That's true.
So, Rainy and I, for you and me, irrelevant.
Yes.
For Nick, he's down with.
Sure.
For some people, boo.
Couple bits of Marvel news. They are developing a spinoff of WandaVision centered on Vision. Going to be at Disney Plus. We don't know too much about it yet, but it's a Vision.
Paul Bettany's going to get to do his thing.
He will. He's going to be White Vision.
I think I don't like saying that. he has done a great job personifying the Vision.
Yep. Isn't that version of the Vision from West Coast Avengers?
Yes, it was a John Byrne thing.
Yeah. Somehow they managed to make it good.
Yes.
As you were pointing out yesterday, Randy, that Burns, like, the stuff that he threw at, story plot-wise, at Vision, Wanda, and Wonder Man, was really to the detriment of all of them.
He wrecked all three of those characters forever.
Yeah.
And then Bendis came in and took a further hatchet to
Wanda. All the kind of, like, although I will say, it has been interesting to me to watch how people reacted to Wanda. I like her as a hero, right? Kind of strange member of the Avengers who has cool weird powers and a relationship with another strange member. It's a good two weirdos who found each other story kind of thing. I don't really like her as a big villainess, but that is something that Byrne set up. I've seen that for many women cosplayers, I think they've enjoyed the option to play a super powerful, fun, gleefully evil character like Wanda.
See, here's the thing for me, and this is why I have problems with Byrne's take on it. There was no reason to make her super powerful and then evil. It's such a thing of, like, no, that doesn't happen.
You know what the deal was? Like, he clearly, having been the artist of Dark Phoenix, yep. but disagreed with Claremont on the writing yep. of a lot of it, he was like, I'm going to do my own version of a woman with too much power who falls under, collapses under that power, but I'm going to do it right.
But didn't he already do that with Sue Storm? Or was that done after?
Those were just kind of like, he did like a one-off with her possessed by, who was that?
The Psycho Man.
No, I was thinking of the one where Malice,
right.
Yeah.
That was all Byrne, right?
That was, but that was kind of a standalone story that didn't have long-standing repercussions for her, other than every once in a while they go back to that well. But the Wanda thing, like, it did permanently kind of tarnish her.
Yeah.
They're like, now she is a sometimes villain, she's always mentally unstable.
Yep.
Like, that's got stuck with her.
Yep, and then Bendis did it, and then it became part of her in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah.
I really feel like he did permanent damage. Same with Vision. His whole thing of, like, well, sometimes he has emotions, sometimes he doesn't. Like, when you destabilize characters like that, you make it so that anyone can then start slapping whatever idea into them they want.
Right. They lose their focus. It'd be like, yeah, if in the second Iron Man or whatever, if he, like, was already changing personalities.
Yep.
You need some stability of concept.
And this is a thing that Bendis does, too. The notion of that
you always want to be shaking it up.
Everybody wants to do what Frank Miller did with Daredevil. The thing is, like, Daredevil needed the refresh.
Also, by the way, when Daredevil refreshed, he stayed that way.
He was still, yeah.
He stayed noir Daredevil, and they didn't keep throwing wrinkles at him, other than to find slight new spins on noir Daredevil.
Yeah. You can't destabilize unless what you... I mean, it's an arrogance thing. You shouldn't destabilize a perfectly good character unless the take you have is better.
Yeah.
And all these guys believe their take is better.
Funny thing is that Byrne, behind the scenes, always talks a good game about how he's like, oh... These creators don't get it anymore. They should go back to the Stanley Jack Kirby
yep.
originals. They
yep.
should always be looking at the original intent. And I was like, bro, you didn't do
you
that.
You never did that. Yep.
And I like a lot of things he did, but
he also
screwed up a bunch of stuff.
Yep.
Including several of those characters that I really like. So that's that said, I think they've done a better job with
they
it
have.
Overall in the movies. They've had more stability, at least for the Vision. We'll see if they can manage to do stuff with Wanda.
Well, they will. And I'm aware that we run a comic store and a TV store and a movie store, but Civil War, like the Civil War comics, are nowhere near as good as Civil War movie. Secret Invasion is probably about to be topped by the trailer for that looks way
yeah.
better than the comic.
Yeah.
Infinity Gauntlet. Much as I love Infinity Gauntlet, I think that the Infinity War thing and the Endgame
right.
did some interesting stuff. No, not to say... Infinity Gauntlet's a perfectly fun read.
I was going to say, that's the one where I'd stop you. I love Infinity Gauntlet.
I do too, but I actually think Infinity War and Endgame is deeper.
I also feel like, because that was written
yeah.
by Jim Shooter, right?
Yeah.
Jim Shooter is a guy who writes some very good moments,
yeah.
but whose bigger stories tend to be riddled with plot holes
yeah.
and contrivances.
I guess the true test is going to be Secret Wars, because I know we all like Secret Wars a lot.
Sure.
And I don't know how you do that in the MCU to make it anywhere near as satisfying as the comic is, because that is a big budget production.
Did I say Jim Shooter? I said
Jim Shooter, but is it Jim Starlin?
Jim Starlin is who I meant.
Yeah.
Jim Shooter actually does do some of those same things.
Yeah.
I've liked some Jim Shooter writing, and Secret Wars is one of them. But, yeah, it's also, you know, it should be very heavily updated.
Yeah. That said, well, I love the Moon Knight TV show. I think the Moon Knight comics are mostly better.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely things where comics do things better. Speaking of Wonder Man, as we were, they have cast their Wonder Man, and it is Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who you may know he's played some comic roles before, notably Dr. Manhattan in Watchmen,
right,
and also Black Manta.
And Aquaman. Through Manhattan in particular, though, we saw him stretch his acting abilities.
Yeah.
So obviously he's a talented guy. People may be going, who's Wonder Man? Because Wonder Man hasn't been a very prominent character for a while, although he's always percolating in the Marvel comics.
Let's be honest, nobody listening to this podcast is going, who's Wonder Man? Because we talk about him a lot.
It's true.
But in case you don't know.
We were reminded just yesterday when we were talking about this news that he goes back to Avengers number 9.
Yep.
Even as a Wonder Man fan, I'm a little hazy on his origins, but he's a super strong guy. He's basically conceptually incredibly strong, like Thor-level strength, but usually kind of portrayed in some level as a reluctant hero.
Yeah.
For the longest time, he wanted to, like, get into acting and be a Hollywood guy, and he had to, like, kind of do stunts, but he didn't want to do that. He wanted to be an actor.
Yep.
And And they've since, like, Bendis screwed him up for a while.
Yeah, Bendis made him a pacifist.
He became, like,
Remender. Bendis made him a supervillain.
Bendis made him a villain, which is great.
And Remender kind of tried to get the, I think at least tried to get the best out of a bad deal there right. by saying, because Bendis' whole idea was, like, he was, like, had him as, like, the Avengers have caused more harm than good, so I have to form a team to destroy the Avengers because they've also caused some problems.
For reasons.
Yeah, it's just awful and sort of, I don't know, almost like, it was almost like, oh, so you don't like the idea of superheroes. I get it, Bendis. Mm-hmm. anyway, I've always liked Wonder Man. If you want to go and look up his iconic 80s era look with the red safari jacket.
Do you think we'll get the red safari jacket look? I really hope we do. I feel like that's
I bet big they thing. Might do a version of that. Well,
Hasbro's just putting out the toy.
That's true. But he also is known for sort of more of, sort of bodybuilder type looks. And some of those uniforms have been pretty cool.
Yeah.
They could do a variant of it where he's got like a bodysuit with like a jacket on over it. Who knows?
Yeah.
There's traditionally in the comics he's a white dude. Here he's a black guy.
Yep.
I can't really see any reason to have any objections, though.
No, there'll be no problems with that on the internet.
They have cast a good actor, though.
He's gonna be good. He'll be good. I don't know what they're gonna do with it, but
we don't know what the spin is. No. But we were talking about this yesterday, and I think the wannabe actor is a good thing.
Yep.
Is a good notion because there's not. I don't think that fits any other hero they have right now.
Nope.
It allows them to potentially show a little bit of like what sort of Hollywood is doing in universe and kind of be a little meta, but hopefully not like She-Hulk level meta, but it's like, oh yeah, are there Avengers movies in the MCU? Yeah,
you don't want to bring a fourth wall, but you could, if he's going to be in LA in the Marvel
Universe, he could have been in the musical or whatever.
You can cross him over with She-Hulk a little bit. Like, I'd love to see She-Hulk and Wonder Man interact.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to do the whole Ionic Energy thing?
I would think so. I think that's one of the things
that makes him unique is, yeah, he's kind of an energy being. He technically doesn't have to breathe or eat and things like that. But he is in other ways a very human guy. He doesn't act weird and removed.
Yeah,
I feel like there's an Avengers musical, right, continuity?
Yes.
I think, like, we should find out that, like, oh, he tried his hand at Broadway, mm-hmm. and he, like, all he could do was he was, like, you know, backup singer or, you know, some small role
extra.
In that.
Yeah.
He was an extra in it.
Yeah.
And now he's trying to get into movies, and, you know, and, again, you can have, like, you can have some fun stuff that Marvel hasn't done yet.
Oh, didn't they do, like, a Easter egg in, was it Guardians 2?
Yeah, there's an Easter egg with Nathan Fillion.
Is he actually in there? No, they talked about it.
I think it just says Simon, it's like a movie poster, right?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I imagine that, I can't imagine they'll stay beholden to an Easter egg.
No.
But yes, there was a time in the past when they at least played around with Nathan Fillion doing some Easter egg versions of him cast as Wonder Man.
Yeah.
Which also he was at least at the time not a bad call for it. Anyway, what else we got?
They're doing a Friday the 13th prequel called Crystal Lake, a series that's going to be on Peacock.
Yeah.
Which is being developed by Brian Fuller, who did
Hannibal.
Hannibal. Was part of the Discovery, Star Trek Discovery.
Yep.
I'm trying to think what else he's done.
He's got one other. What's the show that made his name?
Pushing Daisies?
Pushing Daisies or something? Yep. Yeah. And I was thinking when I heard this, I was like, this guy has a pretty strong pedigree. What is he doing wallowing in the mud with Friday the 13th?
Yeah, he clearly has a fondness for horror.
Yeah.
Because that's what Hannibal was heavily into that, too.
And you're like, and also it's kind of weird because it's like, okay, so it's a prequel.
Yep.
So that means that arguably Jason shouldn't be in there. Although I figured like if they wanted, they could do a framing device that's say set in the present.
Yeah.
Somebody investigating him, finding out his past, and then you see a bunch more stuff about his past and his mom, who was the killer in the first Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Spoiler warning.
Are they going to go back though and show like Jason as a camper there, and then the reveal
is
much creepier, and then like do all the story, do all the characters and that kind of thing. Like,
I think they will probably expand on it in something of the fun trashy way Bates Motel expanded on Norman Bates and his mom.
Brian Fuller has done so much good TV. I'm on board with this.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not a huge Friday the 13th
fan. I am not a Friday the 13th fan, but like that, the idea of sort of somewhat elevating it and seeing what I want to see what he's doing.
Yeah.
I'm curious. It sounds potentially interesting.
And the last bit of news is just kind of a little fun thing. Hasbro's revealed a new line called Dicelings that are Transformers that transform from giant D20s into D&D monsters.
Yep. And it looks like a lot of the monsters that are coming up in the new movie, so presumably this is something of a tie-in. But like, one turns into an owlbear, one turns into
Snowy Owlbear, Red Dragon, Black Dragon,
Beholder.
Also a Beholder, which we haven't seen in the trailers, but they'd be crazy not to put a Beholder in the movie.
Yeah, like, it's probably like, it would be, I would imagine, for many people, the number one monster that you would want to see.
What would be amazing if they're holding on to it is if it's Xanatar.
Yeah.
Because if they are, they are indeed in the Forgotten Realms, we know that for sure. If they have this scene where they have to go talk to the Beholder Crime Lord of Waterdeep, that'd be amazing.
And that's so much more interesting than just a Beholder.
Yeah.
A generic Beholder, although they're going to be neat-looking, people who don't know, these things are giant, weird, floating sphere monsters with lots of little ice stalk tentacles, and each of their eyes can, like, zap out different spell effects.
Again, if there's anyone listening to this podcast who doesn't know what a Beholder is, I feel like we failed.
Some people are comics, more on the comic side, and they don't know D&D nerd stuff.
Anyway, the notion
Beholders
of, like,
are neat, but the crime boss Beholder that lives under the city in D&D's main setting of the Forgotten Realms is one of the coolest ones.
Yeah, basically, if they get to do like a Godfather scene with the Beholder, that'd be amazing. That will go so far toward making that movie good.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, November 2nd, and I can't believe how close we're getting to the end of the year already. It feels like this year... So I was looking at this the other day, and I was like, Scream came out, and Everything Everywhere All at Once both came out this year, and that both feels like things I saw last year.
Yep, there was some other movie that I was like, was it The Batman?
Yeah, The Batman
that
was this year.
And I was like, no, that was like 2 years ago or something.
That was this year. That's but at the same time, I'm like, this year has been long. At the same time, I'm like... How is it November already? So it's like a weird time distortion.
Yeah, thanks thanks a lot, pandemic, for creating insane time dilation effects.
But we are into the first week of November comics, and I guess the big release this week is Batman and the Joker, The Deadly Duo, which is a Black Label series in which Batman and the Joker are forced to team up. And the notable thing is it's an Image creator, Mark Silvestro, returning to DC to write and draw a big story of Batman and the Joker.
And people, you know, if you know Mark Silvestri, you might know him from X-Men, where he was drawing it during some pretty iconic runs. Like, it was the Outback era.
It was.
Then also he did Cyberforce at Image. That was his Image thing. That was, like, either Wave 1 of Image or Wave 2 when they, you know, in the 90s when Spawn and Wildcats and all that were hitting. I think it might have been in the second wave. But anyway, he's a talented artist, and, you know, somewhat in that school of, you know, a Jim Lee or something like that.
Yep.
It's interesting to see where his art's evolved, and, folks looking for that kind of, the kind of pushing the boundary stories that you can do in out-of-continuity Batman should check it out.
There is also the new Marvel miniseries Secret Invasion. This is their second go at this. It is written by Ryan North of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl and also Dinosaur Comics. And it looks like they're going to be doing more of the... bringing it closer in line with what they're going to be doing in the MCU, which means it is a Nick Fury, Maria Hill spy-type story.
Yep.
It's a good first issue.
Yeah, I like this one. It's fun.
The premise is interesting.
It starts with Nick Fury being called to like a single... I don't know if it's like a rural or suburban place.
Yeah, a farmhouse in like Oklahoma.
It's a farmhouse. A single family to investigate, a call-in. Like, they think that there is a Skrull among them, and there's an interesting sort of thoughts to be had. And then you get to see, like, Maria Hill trying to sort of do some outmaneuvering of a possible Skrull invasion. It does seem like they're pretty smart about it. They've got protocols in place. They know the Skrulls' tricks it somewhat.
Yep.
And there, you know, there's a question, of course, of how deep this goes. Are the Skrulls just agitating and not actually doing an invasion, but just trying to destabilize? There's some neat ideas in there.
Yeah, it's a good first issue. There's also a new Deadpool. If you know anything about this podcast, you know Dave and I are. There's confetti all over the office floor.
Deadpool fans number one. We're usually, while we are podcasting, eating a chimichanga in honor.
I thought you'd be enjoying it, because he basically makes fun of all of the infographics that Jonathan Hickman did. He writes all over them in red Sharpie, making his own jokes.
This is exactly the kind of thing that Deadpool does, where I'm like, this is an obvious joke and I don't like it. Anyway, the big thing here is they're combining Deadpool with another character who I also don't like, except that I like him in Marvel Snap.
And, can we see the other characters?
No, it's you don't want to spoil it.
It's a reveal. Okay.
It's a reveal.
But he also is like hired to kill Dr. Octopus.
He's hired to kill Dr. Octopus.
Yeah. Also dealing with an X-Men villain that I don't know much about called the Harrower.
Yeah, I don't know that character either.
But she has like sort of genetic
that
manipulation.
That sounds like a character that they can kill off if they need to.
Yep. Anyway, if you've been missing Deadpool, we've noticed there had not been a Deadpool series for a while.
Yeah.
There is now a Deadpool number one.
I will say, though, that this new writer, I don't recognize
Alyssa Wong. They are new. They're a new Marvel writer.
Yeah, I actually thought they got a really good handle on the character.
Okay.
And there was some really good like one-liners. She seems to get Wade's humor pretty well.
Well,
and I thought
profile,
the action was good.
There's a profile on Alyssa Wong in some of their Marvel comics. I don't know if it might have been this one.
It is.
And apparently non-binary, which there are not a lot of non-binary writers at Marvel that I know of. And they listed some of their favorite stuff they liked, and I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Seems like a Deadpool writer. Yeah, so.
It was a good first issue. I really enjoyed it.
It's great if you like Deadpool. There's also Tiger Division, which is the South Korean superhero team that was introduced by Jed McKay in Black Cat.
Yep.
It is run by White Fox, who is a diplomat and shape-changer. And then this introduces the characters. This is a good job of introducing a new team. I like that they're all, like, one of them is a pop star. One of them is an older gambler. Her former name was Auntie Auntie, as in A-N-T-E.
Yeah.
Then there's a guy who's a demigod party god. So it's like,
that's
it's
fun.
Some fun characters. There's a robot, there's a Superman type. And it's basically a...
It makes sense. There is an increasing influence from Korean culture, whether you're talking about K-pop or a show like Squid Games or something like that.
Yep.
It is just suffusing a lot more American culture. Totally makes sense to be spotlighting more Korean superheroes.
Yep. Yeah. It's a fun single issue. Charles Soule has a new book with artist Will Sliney called Hell to Pay. This is an Image book.
This was great.
This is really good. I have an advanced look at this, so I've seen the first three issues, and it just gets better and better. It is a...
You know, I wrote down the premise based on what the for when I was making the sign for it, and then found as I read it, is that their solicit for it wasn't quite the vibe of it.
Doesn't get it. So it's a husband and wife team who are basically trying to recover these coins that came out of hell. And they're doing... And if they do it, if they finish it up, they will be relieved from their service. But... It as it goes on, it's going to get more and more interesting.
But it has a sort of tongue-in-cheek Ocean's 11 heisty kind of
yes,
vibe
right.
to it.
Yeah.
That really
and
sells
also,
it.
They had ultimately, they were going to some sort of a, like a magic college.
Yeah.
And that is kind of like, I was trying to figure out if they were like sort of spoofing the paying off college debt and feeling like you had to sell your soul.
Right.
Where in their case, because of the magic shit involved,
they
it's kind of like they did.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, this is like... and yet there's also kind of a nice fantasy idea. It's like, okay, what if you had to get yourself out of debt by having adventures with your wife?
Yeah.
And they're like a fun adventuring couple.
They've got a real Nick and Nora Thin Man kind of thing going,
Where
too.
Where do I know the art of Will Sliney?
You know him from Spider-Man 2099, among other things.
Okay, yes.
I feel
it's really good in
but
this.
Really, really good.
There's also a fun character in it who's like... very narcissistic rich guy
who
imagine an Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or whatever who gets into a cult, finds out there's real demons in hell, and tries to kind of like, in addition to like his building up his collection of like, oh, I've got the real Mona Lisa and the museum's got the fake and stuff like that, he is involved in matters related to hell, and almost like it's almost like crypto currency from hell.
Yeah, I thought this version of hell is one of the more interesting versions I've seen.
Yeah,
Dave, but, I think you've touched on a lot. There's crypto debt. There's a lot of like demonic money laundering kind of stuff going on.
Yeah,
it
feels quite relevant.
There's a lot of themes going on in here,
and it's something that I'm not really seeing explored in other comics. Charles Soule is usually good with the concepts here, and his background in law, I think. Usually somewhat informs these kind of thoughts.
Yeah, as high concepts go, Charles Soule may be the winner right now.
Yeah.
There is a new Boom book called Behold Behemoth. It is it's another horror book from them. They like doing the horror books.
It's horror post-apocalyptic kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or pre-apocalyptic,
pre-apocalyptic, yeah.
gorgeous artwork, and a story that I'm interested in, just to see where it goes, but it feels like it's like about a a brother who was like a works for like helping kids, or and then he has some touchstone with this power and finds another person that may about cause the apocalypse. I don't know.
Sure.
There was interesting stuff.
Okay. Kevin Smith has a new book called Quick Stops at Dark Horse. This is his, basically he's going to be revisiting along with some artists. This is a black and white book.
It's the View Askewniverse.
Yeah, this harkens back to his first comics he did when he wasn't the big guy who'd done Batman and Green Arrow, when he was just the movie guy coming in to do comics. And this is him revisiting Chasing Amy. It's revisiting his, the character Ben Affleck played, what happened after Chasing Amy ended.
Clearly a little bit of himself, or a lot of bit of himself, because that character is like now does podcasting and interviews, much like Kevin Smith does with his own podcast. What else? There's, you know, there's Jay and Silent Bob in it, of course.
And Bloodman and Chronic.
Bloodman and Chronic. I think if you're a Kevin Smith fan, though, I do think it's a must.
Yeah.
It is a deep dive back into that universe, mm-hmm. and if you like any or all of those movies and those characters, this is like actually building out the lore.
Then there's this interesting little bit of Cross-Gen Tales. This is a Marvel reprint. It's like a $9 reprint book. It's got four stories in it.
Four first issues, right?
Yeah, Ruse, Mystic, Sigil, and Sojourn. Two of which are fantasy, one of which is sci-fi, one of which is sort of a magic-infused Sherlock Holmes story.
Cross-Gen was a ultimately short-lived, like 5 or 6 years, comic line that was big in the very earliest days that we existed here in Round Rock, when we were still Dragon's Lair, and was notable for kind of solidly crafted, sometimes amazing artwork, sometimes stories that were okay to good, never not too often hitting great,
right?
But had like they did the genres that nobody was doing at the time, so right. Fantasy, sci-fi, crime, mystery, that kind of thing, and then they collapsed under their own weight. It was kind of run by a guy who was, you know, imagine a Jeff Bezos or something like that, who was like, oh, I'm going to use some of my idle investment money and run a comic company. I always kind of wanted to do it as a hobby. But imagine that clashing with the ego of someone like that, where, you know, he wanted to get his way and grow fast and out, and he was like, I'm going to bury Marvel in DC.
Yep.
People who say that kind of stupid stuff get buried, and they did.
Yeah.
But Marvel now owns the rights, and has for a while, I guess, to all the Cross-Gen characters. And I think you probably correctly guessed, Randy, that this may just be a hold on to the license by keeping it in print.
Yeah, thing. Which is too bad, because they really should print more of it.
Yep. I was flipping through it, and I was having some fond memories of reading these originally and seeing, like, oh, it would be neat to, you know, it was nice to have, Mark Waid's Ruse, which was like a spin on a Sherlock Holmes comic.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sojourn, which was, you know, a good solid fantasy comic that I think I could easily point to someone who's like, I play fantasy video games, you know, I play, like, Bloodborne or Elden Ring or whatever. Right. It's like, are there any fun fantasy comics? And I'm like, oh, Sojourn would have been one that I could recommend. We don't know if there's going to be more of these or not, or if it's just reprinting the first issues kind of on a lark or to...
But even if it, like, these single issues, they're all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all entertaining.
Yeah. If you end up picking it up and digging it, maybe Marvel will be like, you know what, let's revisit these characters or something. Who knows?
Worth noting that Dark Knights of Steel returns this week with number 8 of the 12-issue series. So we're into the last story arc. It's really good. It's,
man,
Tom Taylor.
That's a great issue.
Yeah, it's super good. She-Hulk returns this week. I think
new arc, I believe.
Yep. And Dave, I think you and I both read the trade, which has 1 through 6.
Yep.
And really enjoyed it, and I'm enjoying the series.
Yeah,
looks like a new artist.
It's
okay,
good.
New artist is good.
Is it a new artist?
It's a new artist.
Oh, okay. I think the new artist is very good.
Yeah, the new artist is really good.
It has the same strengths as I think the previous artists have, and they're moving forward on some new plot stuff and a fun new legal case here, as well as her relationship with Jack of Hearts, which is a thing.
Right. There's a new issue of Punisher, which continues his throwdown with Daredevil. There's a new story arc of Savage Avengers, which has them in 2099 with Punisher 2099.
Nice.
Yep.
There is another issue of Predator. Second issues of a couple of notable indie books, Earth Divers, which we talked about, which is the time travelers going back to kill Columbus and try to prevent America from forming and causing a post-apocalyptic world.
Environmental collapse.
Yeah. And then Scott Snyder and Francesco Francavilla's Night of the Ghoul, number two. Another spooky, scary book.
Yep.
And then Star Trek Picard Stargazer, which is issue three, I guess, wraps up the story. It's a little between seasons two and three of Picard, I think.
I need to read that.
Yeah, it was good. And then if you are a Critical Role fan, this is a good Critical Role week. There's volume three of the Vox Machina Origins and a new novel. The previous one was called Kith and Kin. This new one is called The Many Eyes of Lucian. I know some people are looking forward to that. So there's a double dose of Critical Role this week. And I think that's everything comics-wise.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I did miss... We missed one, The Ones, the Bendis' new Dark Horse book.
Oh, yeah. Right. How would you describe the plot?
Like, the superheroes of that world sort of come together to fight a big bad. There's definitely more to it.
The nature of the big bad is kind of an interesting part of it.
Yeah, and sort of the creation of the team is interesting. It's sort of a build... get the team together issue, which is always a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about some movies and a video game and a TV show. All right, let's start this off by talking about Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities, which would say... We're going to maybe have spoilers for the first episode, which is the only one that we've all three seen.
Right.
Yep.
I have seen all the episodes and really, really enjoyed this. Highly recommend this.
So we'll talk a little more generally about the rest of the series,
and
too.
Then Nick has seen six of them?
Yeah, five or six.
This is a... did you say it's a Netflix show?
It's a Netflix show. It's an anthology in which...
No connection between episodes, right?
No, not really. The only thing that's connecting it is they're all kind of Lovecraftian.
Kind of creature features.
Two of them are based on H.P. Lovecraft's work specifically, but all of them are very Lovecraftian. They have creature design by Guy Davis.
Yep.
The amazing artist of many a Hellboy comic and BPRD.
Yep.
He's a fantastic
artist. It seems so perfect that he and Del Toro would get together.
Yeah, I mean, they did. He did Pacific Rim with him.
Did he?
Randy told me that the other day, and I had completely forgotten.
Yeah,
What's the Spanish language one? Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
He did the creature design of Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh.
Yeah, he's been working with him for years.
Oh, well,
he left comics to work with Guillermo del Toro, so...
That's a little sad.
Now he probably has a lot of money.
A lot of money, yeah. A lot more money.
But I will say, this is kind of like a higher caliber, like Creepshow.
Yes, that's... I would compare it to Creepshow, Crypt of... Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, but on a higher level.
I don't know if it's like this in the other episodes, but in the first episode, arguably, a fairly bad person gets into a bad situation and something bad happens to him, which is a classic Creepshow type format.
And that person is Tim Blake Nelson, by the way, who you would recognize if you know. He's a character actor. He's great.
Yeah. That formula sort of holds true, but not always.
Okay. And I'll say this. One of the things I liked watching that first episode, I had heard in advance a review that said this wasn't a super scary show, right? Guillermo del Toro does a lot of horror.
Yeah.
And, like, sometimes it has very tense sequences in it.
Yeah.
And at least of that first episode, I found it was true. It's not like... Like, aside from some make-you-jump moments and, like, some creepy... pretty creepy ending.
Yeah.
It's not, like, extremely scary, but I actually think that's fine. I think horror can branch out and just tell interesting, macabre, supernatural stories. Not everything has to be jump scare.
There are some scary stories later on.
Yeah, I kind of just view them as character studies.
Right, and so in this first one, that's what I kind of wanted to touch on. You've got a guy who's kind of running a scam at a storage unit place.
Well, yeah, scam is kind of relative.
He buys up storage units, and this is, by the way, an old building that goes back to like the 40s.
Yeah.
He buys up storage units for not knowing what's in them, as that because they haven't been claimed or that
storage wars and stuff, like some of the reality television stuff.
I don't watch any of that, so I don't know.
It's definitely a thing.
So that's kind of probably the inspiration for it. He himself, it's set in the 80s or early 90s, I think. Because it was Gulf War.
Yeah, Gulf War vet.
And he is an unsavory guy. He listens to like right wing radio. He's a put upon white guy who's feels like he's gotten a bad hand in life. Kind of racist, more than a little bit.
I was going to say, take the kind of out of that.
But here was the thing that I thought was kind of interesting about that. He has a at least friendship/frenemy ship with the black guy who runs the place. It doesn't mean that, like, he doesn't act overtly racist towards this guy. He's just a kind of constant jerk to everybody. But yeah. he has enough nuance that he isn't just, like, raw evil. He's a bad person.
Yeah.
But I found him a little more compelling, a little more nuanced than some of the other ones. Mostly he reeked of desperation.
Yeah. Well, that's also because...
He owes money.
Tim Blake Nelson is such a good actor.
And then for sure. He's a great actor. He brings a lot. He brings a little dimension to the character who could have been very flat.
Because, like, he owes money to the, like, a loan shark that he's trying to collect...
And then there's an interesting series of circumstances in that first one where he finds, of course, something. There's video footage of the person who owned it before, security cam footage of this guy who's been going there for decades, an old man who died of a heart attack, who would go to this unit, move these like almost like strange dance like movements, like little hops outside, like a ritualistic.
It looked like he was playing hopscotch a little bit.
Yeah, he would do it outside the door, go in with a filled bag. Leave with it empty every time as if he was putting something in there, and he'd been doing it like every day for like decades and decades, and they're like, where's all the stuff going? What's in this storage unit? And that's what lot 36, I think, is what you're going to find out. He'll eventually get into contact with some occultist type people that it kind of comes about in a realistic way, and he like shows it to like a book dealer, and she's like, this is something, let me call my friend. And you sort of see the process. And I actually really enjoyed it. I found it, like, compelling watching throughout, and I'm kind of excited to see the rest. I think my brother, who's, like, a horror fan as well, was more lukewarm. But I wonder if part of it was expectations. I think he maybe was looking for scarier stuff.
I guess to me, I'm like, I don't need this to be super scary. I just need to be effective storytelling.
Yeah.
And it is, without a doubt, effective storytelling. And I think the entire series is like that.
Well, and I like the opener that Del Toro comes out and talks about sort of the theme.
He does the Rod Serling style, but a little different.
And then does a little figurine of the director.
Yeah, like he like wants really to spotlight the creator.
And a lot of the directors are people that he's friends with.
Catherine Hardwick is one of the directors. The director of Mandy is one of the directors. This is a talented crew.
We talked about this before when we were just learning a little bit about it. Yeah. And there's some very talented people involved.
So having seen all eight of these and not wanting to spoil them for you guys, I think episode one is maybe in my top three.
Okay.
But it's not my favorite. My favorite is the one that Nick has not seen yet. That's episode 7.
Okay.
And my second favorite is the one that is your favorite currently, or maybe your
favorite. Yeah, the autopsy.
The autopsy, which has F. Murray Abraham, and is a fantastic episode.
And that's like an adaptation of like a Hugo Award-winning short story.
It's interesting. There's also Pickman's Model, which is a H.P. Lovecraft.
Yep.
Which stars Crispin Glover in a very interesting role.
Oh, Crispin Glover. Yeah. And Dreams in the Witch House is also a Lovecraft story.
Which has Rupert Grint.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen that one yet. I like Rupert Grint. He actually has done horror in that M. Night Shyamalan Apple TV Plus show for a while, and he does really well in it.
Yeah, without saying too much about the Witch House, I believe that has a... there's a ghost, and there's a sort of a guy who's obsessed with his lost sister who died when he was young.
Okay.
The weirdest one was definitely the body cream.
No, the weirdest one you haven't seen yet.
Oh, okay.
But the second weirdest one is the body cream. That's Kate Micucci, and it is almost straight up like a Tales from the Dark Side kind of
thing. Yeah, it is. But she's great in it.
She's great in it. So that one has her, Martin Starr as her, like, beleaguered husband, and Dan Stevens as this, like, Svengali body cream selling guy.
Yes.
And it's great.
Dan Stevens' accent is amazing.
It's fantastic. That one is... Of all of them, it is the one that most not... doesn't feel like the rest of them. But it is... there's a little bit of Lovecraftian to it. The sort of, like, dangers
of all of them have an interesting vibe.
Yeah.
Even ones that I don't think, like, hit the mark completely, I was like, okay, I enjoyed it for what it was.
I've liked every episode.
Yeah.
I would say that one with Kate Micucci is a weirder one, and it feels a little bit out of place with the rest of it. But it's like, you can see where it belongs.
Oh, yeah.
And it is a good episode. So, yeah.
It's a recommendation for Cabinet of Curiosity.
Absolutely. I am super happy I watched this.
I've only seen one, but I enjoyed it. So I'm planning to watch more.
Y'all were talking about this video game, Until Dawn.
An old game. Like 10 years, 8 years, something like that, maybe?
I don't even know. You were just playing it, and you were kind of sort of like...
I finally finished it after having done several small starts over the years. A horror game.
Well, you described a couple of sequences, and they were like, this is really cool, let me tell you about this. And I was like, okay. And then you just gave it to me to play.
Yeah.
And I played it in like 2 days just because yeah. I was like, okay, I'll sit down.
It's a lot of jump scares, Nick.
It is, but it's Halloween. It was the perfect time. I finished it actually on yeah. Halloween night.
I saw that. And it was also like, if I were to describe this game pretty simply, I would say imagine a Telltale game, not quite as dialogue heavy, but a little bit like that. But with really beautiful graphics,
yeah.
set in and around a ski resort with a slasher type motif, but some secrets and some questions about whether things might be supernatural or might not be,
right?
And a game choices that can either get like you can get through with most or all of the characters alive, or like maybe none of the characters alive. And some interesting developments as you play where people you might think that you would be happy to have die, you might change your mind about a little bit as the game goes on.
Yeah,
so what were your thoughts as you...
I really enjoyed it. I had some issues with some of like the controls.
A little kludgy,
and they really are like, you have to hit the buttons. Like,
oh,
completely, or... you're effed.
I remember on some of the previous times I played this, that actually threw me off. As it happened, I forget what games I've been playing, but like some Metal Gear games and stuff like that that use like all the buttons on it. So at the time, I was like, I'm not going to forget where the triangle and the square and the circle and stuff are on my PlayStation because I've been playing some other games that use enough of that. But
I did pretty good
at those like sort of quick time events. What'll happen is in the game is say you're being chased and your character will be like running through the woods and suddenly the like a little triangle button icon will appear on the screen with a little sort of clock like timer that's only about like 1 second long maybe less than a second
yeah.
and it's counting down and you have to quick hit that button in that before it counts down or. Your character might hit their head on a branch, trip on something, sprain an ankle.
If your head ripped off.
If it happens, it usually won't happen on the first time, but if you screw up enough, it could be what gets the character killed.
Oh, no, it was one time, and I got my head ripped off.
Well,
it was later in the game.
I was going to say later in the game. At that point, Nick, you knew the deal.
I did, but it was a character I didn't want to die.
Yeah, I get it. I think we both found...
It thematically worked.
There is a girl in it who is, like, she is absolutely the mean girl of the bunch.
She survived in my game.
Yeah.
Because she was smart and kind of all about herself.
and when I was playing her, I did find that after getting through a few difficult sequences with her, and some cases, like, you're doing things like... there's, like, a mineshaft that she's in, and she's, like, climbing it.
Yep.
And you're, like... it'll give you a quick option. Do you want to climb, which might be the safer path, or jump, which is probably going to involve some timed thing, but could get you out quickly, so you're just done with it. And I'm like, and you do that several times, and so sometimes when you get done with these sequences, you're very anxious, and you're like, I need her to live now.
Yeah, it was kind of the thing I really enjoyed about it is it took characters that I thought were kind of like outright dumb or evil. And sort of put their own spin on it that made me care. My favorite character in the entire game was kind of like the asshole jock that starts at the beginning. But, I mean, you're also changing their choices and sort of making them a little bit...
You end up directing their lives for a bit.
And he ultimately became one of my favorite characters, and in my game, at the very last minute, he dies.
That's horrible. This is a person who I know, we have both had this happen, had to chop off some of his own fingers in the game to get away from some threats.
Some stupid thing that I thought looked cool and then it cost me some fingers.
Yes. When I talked about this before, we had mentioned that these characters are all motion captured and facially modeled on real actors. So one of the more notable ones is Rami Malek.
Yeah, Hayden Panettiere.
Hayden Panettiere. Peter Stormare has a lot of fun with the bridging sequences. He's like a sort of manic psychiatrist who's talking to you, the viewer, seemingly, you might eventually find out who he's talking to.
Yeah.
But he'll ask you things like, you know, I'm going to show you a series of cards and you're going to tell me which one makes you most afraid. And when you show it to, he'll show you and you'll pick one and he'll be like, spiders. Interesting.
Yeah, he wasn't...
And sure enough, spiders will, like, show in the game later on.
He wasn't quite, like, Unpimp the Auto, Peter Stormare, but he was close.
He was having fun with it,
I
could tell.
He was very...
And, it is, but it is a good time. One of the things is, because of those slightly kludgy controls, you kind of move around a little bit slowly. Like, few people... You can't do much more than a a brisk walk is the fastest you can do. But that means that you don't get that goofy thing. Like, if you've ever played multiplayer games, you know, everybody's, like, jumping around so they don't get shot. And, you know, imagine doing that in a horror movie and how stupid it would look. So this game is like, yeah, there ain't no jumping in this. And you just move around.
Yeah.
You get occasional quick time events, but you do make choices constantly. And they even bring up the butterfly effect because it's a thing. Like, a choice you make early on, some piece of something you pick up that you have with you, that could save you later.
Yeah, one of the totems.
Yeah. You pick up these little sort of mystic totems sometimes, and they give you a brief flash, like less than a second.
It saved you. It notably changed one thing for me.
Well, I know that when I was playing this with my brother, and there was one we saw where somebody is walking by what looked like kind of like grill work or, you know, like a chain link fence or something, and hands come out and grab them. And I was like, oh, and then we were like going through an asylum area, and I was like, my brother was like walking right up against the wall, and I'm like, get away from that wall! Get away from it! Like, that's just like in the dream.
This is a single player game, but I could imagine how fun it would be to playing with like a group and sort of doing that kind of real time decision.
We traded off basically every chapter, and
there's
it was
10
a lot of
chapters.
Fun. What's that?
There's 10 chapters.
Sounds
I believe
about right. anyway, it's a good scary game with a good story. By the way, I think the mystery that unfolds that also. That has both the stuff in the present and then also lore that goes back to the 50s.
Yep.
Is a pretty good story. And these guys are continuing to make games. I forget the name of the company, but they play some other ones where you can actually play the same kind of game, but multiplay with someone where you will be playing... your characters won't interact, but you will interact with other AI characters and be altering the course of things, possibly in the same room together. It'd be like if you're having conversations with other people and it will... The choice you make could directly impact your co-player right then and there.
I will probably seek those out because I was sort of enamored with the changing story and possibilities.
The perspective.
It was
that's
just a lot of fun.
That's their thing, is playing all the different characters.
Yeah, it was cool.
So,
it is spooky season has come to a close, I suppose.
Yeah, it never comes to close for me.
Fair
enough. What you're talking about.
But we did all sneak in the last few... Halloween watches.
Yeah.
Dave, you and I rewatched Barbarian. I introduced that to our ex-staffer, Shireen.
Yep.
She had not seen it. You came in the halfway point, right as I think Justin Long was showing up, maybe?
A little past his arrival.
Yeah.
I can tell this is going to be a movie that I'm going to enjoy rewatching because it has so many good scenes in it.
Yeah.
It's very compelling. It is like... If I had to just say what was my best theater experience this year, that was it.
Yeah. I also think it was so smart that they put it... not only did they release it digital, but they put it on HBO the week of Halloween.
Yeah.
I mean, it was such a good move.
Yeah. I know a few people who have not liked it or who have just been kind of a little... almost shocked by it. Like, what just happened?
Right.
Because there's a lot to this movie. It does kind of change up its mode a few times. Early on, it's quite suspenseful in a low-key way, and then it changes directions, and then it changes directions again. And but very intentionally, and always building on its mystery and reveals.
Yeah.
And I'm like, any given one of those parts, I really like watching.
Yeah.
Justin Long is, in fact, fantastic in it.
Yes.
And great. Again, if you haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil too much about it. Just go watch an HBO match for, like, horror at all. It is super fun.
Yeah, don't read up about it. It'll be so much more fun to just take it as it happens.
And then we watched Overlord, the zombie movie.
Like Zombie World War II.
Zombie World War II that you had never seen, that I had watched, forgotten entirely. Like, I had literally forgotten everything about this movie. But
it is a fun movie that is... In some ways, slightly forgettable.
It is. I mean, so this is... I thought,
which
this
is a weird thing to say, but...
No, I thought this was Drew though. Goddard, but I think Drew Goddard was like a producer on it.
Yeah, he was.
It's a new director. I didn't remember the director from anything. But it is a... it's a World War II. It opens on board a paratroop. They're
it's D-Day.
Yeah, it's D-Day. And these guys have a mission to get into France and take down a radio tower on a church in a French village... So that they can get air cover for D-Day.
Yeah, something like that.
So it's like a special mission for these airborne guys, and the opening
seems simple enough: knock down the tower over the church.
And they're opening up, and our lead is sort of this reluctant guy. He's not much of a soldier. The guys don't think much of his soldiering.
Right.
They've got this badass sergeant played by Bokeem Woodbine, who's really cool. He gets a great little moment, and they've got this new guy on their crew played by Wyatt Russell.
kind of sort of a no-nonsense.
Yeah, he's their demolitions expert, and he's not, like, keeps to himself, and he seems a little bit maybe haunted by things.
Yep.
Anyway, the drop goes bad, and the cut down from like a dozen people to like four of them.
Yep.
And they still have to get into this tower thing, and then it turns out the Nazis have been experimenting on the people in this village, and maybe creating zombies.
Yes. And like, you won't really hit that until, like what, 40, 45 minutes in, something like that?
Well into the movie, yeah. It's a World War II movie for the first, like, hour.
And slightly pulp, you know? Yeah. Like realistic enough to feel like there's stakes, but kind of pulp enough to kind of have a sort of an adventuresome vibe, too.
Yeah.
And it's not big. It's not Band of Brothers, is it? I guess it's what not. I'm saying. But it has just a little bit of it. It for sure has some influence from that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you did this creepy, cool Nazi experiment, sneaking around in their castles.
And their zombies are like this, like super zombies.
Yeah, they're all like, it's like, it's almost like they get juiced up the way Bane does.
Yeah, exactly.
And
you can't even take them out with headshots. Like, these guys get shot in the head and get back up.
And there's also a few twists. There was like, and turns, you know, there's people they're trying to protect. There's secrets to find inside the castle. There's stuff in the nearby French village that they kind of, you know, go back and forth between that and their target. It is a neat little kind of like wartime movie with horror, as opposed to being like kind of a straight horror movie set during wartime.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. I wonder if by this time this year I'll have forgotten entirely again.
It's quite possible.
It'll be a new movie every time.
Yeah,
that's its magic.
I enjoyed it. I just didn't remember it.
Yeah.
Nick, you watched Deadstream, which is over on Shudder.
Yeah, they just put it on Shudder. I had a lot of fun with this. So basically, the plot is very simple. A disgraced like YouTuber is trying to win back his followers by live streaming in a supposedly super haunted house, where he
accidentally
pisses off the ghost that's in there.
disgraced YouTuber is actually such a common phenomena.
Yes,
but I don't feel I see it particularly brought up in movies. So that's actually a good hook.
Yeah, it's a good hook. It's a lot of fun.
Is it in fact a kind of found footage movie?
Well, he's live streaming it, so it's told sort of.
Are you only seeing that?
No. Okay. You're seeing that incorporated
some normal
with
movie
some normal
making.
Stuff as well. It has a very kind of Sam Raimi type grossness to it that I found. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that very much.
Sure.
Drag Me to Hell is one of my favorite Sam Raimi films, and it felt very much in line with that.
I just I rewatched Trick or Treat yesterday. Trick or Treat has a lot of sort of evil but comically evil gore and stuff in it.
But it's one of those things, like in the video game, like the person
Until
is despicable
Dawn.
And I don't like them, but at the end of it I was like, okay, I can root for you a little bit.
Yeah.
It just had a good sense of humor, a good story, and if you've got Shudder, it's an easy one to press play on.
I do not have Shudder, but I need to I want to see this one. So.
Yeah, I've heard generally good things about this one. All right. I think that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Well, you guys. No, we won't. We'll be back in 2 weeks because... Oh, no, wait. I lied. I'm going to be here on Tuesday. Next week is BGGCon.
So at some point, you were going to send you off into the trenches.
There is a board game. There's a big board game convention. So the week after next, I'll come back with a report of the 30-some games I have played. Yeah. But I will be here on Tuesday, and we should be able to get a podcast done, maybe.
Very exciting possibilities.
Yes, so there's a possibility of a podcast next week. If there isn't, you know what happened. Obviously, werewolves ate us.
Nazi zombies.
Nazi zombies and werewolves. And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.